Welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Alice Bradley, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Jordan Calhoun, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we are learning how to control that voice inside our head.
That's right. We're getting a better grip on our inner critic with help from psychologist Ethan Cross.
It can consume us. And, you know, we only have a limited ability to focus at any given time on a problem or a paper or an assignment. And when we're consumed with chatter, that's soaking up all of the mental resources we have to focus, leaving nothing over to do what we need to do.
Ethan is a professor at the University of Michigan Psychology Department and Ross School of Business. He's one of the world's leading experts on controlling the conscious mind, and his research explores how people can control their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors to improve their lives.
Ethan just published his first book called Chatter, The Voice in Our Head, Why It Matters, and How to Harness It. And he joined us to talk about how our inner critic can both help us and hurt us and the tools that we can use to manage it.
So Jordan, how's your inner critic doing these days?
My inner critic is not in control of the car, but definitely in the passenger seat, definitely there, maybe giving some backseat driving. And I do okay, I think, shushing him sometimes. When you're talking to yourself, are you talking in first person or third person?
Who are you talking to when you're talking to yourself? I'm not always aware that I'm talking at all. I think that's part of the process of kind of taming my inner critic was becoming aware of it. Where I would just be kind of aware of feeling anxious, and then I'd have to think, like, what am I telling myself? And then I would sort of become aware of like this loop in my head that's like, you suck, you're the worst, Alice. No one likes you.
I think, I don't know when I started doing this, and I don't know if it's good or bad. I'm sure Ethan will explain it to me, but I talk as if I am talking to another person, sort of. I'm not really having a conversation with myself, but I'm talking as if I'm having a conversation with my brother for some reason. Like, normally, if I'm walking and I'm tired and I have a certain distance to go, I'm just like, okay, we only have three more blocks to go. And I say we, and the implicit we in my head is like me as if I'm walking alongside my brother who I grew up with, like I'm a younger sibling. So I don't know if that's normal. It's one of those things like, you always wonder what's going on in other people's heads and if they talk in the same sort of tenses that you do, like, you know, sort of like, you know, if you eat a watermelon, does it taste the same to you as it does to someone else? It's almost impossible to know. But I think of having a conversation with my brother whenever I'm doing anything almost.
Interesting. I find that I'm often telling somebody about what's happening.
Yeah.
Like I'm making a story up about what's going on
while
it's happening.
Yeah, I do the exact same thing, but my sort of go-to stand-in for who I'm explaining it to is like sometimes it's a friend, sometimes it's my brother, sometimes it's other people, but like usually I'm explaining something as if I'm explaining it to an external person and not explaining it to myself.
Yeah, I think that's a good... I mean, that seems healthy enough to me as long as you get along with your brother.
I love my brother.
Okay, that's good.
That is a great tool. I wonder if people stand in as like an enemy, like someone who they absolutely hate. And they've got this chip on their shoulder because they're just talking it through with this person that they don't like.
Right, just defending yourself to your nemesis all day long.
Exactly.
You know, when I was blogging and would read things kind of about myself online, that voice got in my head.
I was just going to ask that, like how much of your inner voice is from other things that you've heard from other people and then you're replaying it.
Oh my God. I mean, I just got this like this voice of being like, who does she think she is? Got into my head to such an extent that I really had to stop reading everything about myself, which is the best advice I can give anybody who's doing anything like that.
It is absolutely fascinating. And I'm really glad we have an expert in Ethan who can sort of walk us through and talk about his book and how we can sort of control that voice a little better.
Let's do it. So Ethan, welcome to The Upgrade.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
So So tell our listeners, what exactly is chatter and how does it factor into our identity?
Well, so chatter is what happens when we experience problems. We turn our attention inward to try to solve those problems, but we don't come up with solutions and we instead start spinning. So we ruminate, we catastrophize, we worry. I'm sure you've never had an experience with any of those states, of course.
Of course not.
Never.
But it's a pretty common experience. And what makes chatter really debilitating is it takes what I think of as this amazing superpower that people possess, the ability to use our mind and language to make sense of our experience in the world, right? We often talk to ourselves to make sense of what we're experiencing, to control ourselves, to plan for the future. Like, I might think to myself, well, how am I going to respond when I'm asked a question by Allison Jordan? And then I'll say something in my head. I'll hear what I say. I'll hear you say something back. So that's a real amazing tool that we possess. And when we experience chatter, it runs off course in ways that I think anyone who has worried or ruminated or catastrophized knows can be quite debilitating.
Can you give an example of what it's like when your chatter runs off course? Like, what's normal for someone's internal monologue, and what's sort of an example of what people, just so people can wrap their head around what chatter might sound like to them?
Sure. So I think the first thing to clarify is chatter is not just negative self-talk. When I talk to people about this topic, a lot of people say, well, how do I stop being negative with myself? The ability to be critical in certain moments is really useful. Like if I flub an interview or a presentation, it's good for me to be able to say, oh, you messed that up. You know, here's what went wrong. What chatter is when we get stuck in a thought loop. So I messed up. Oh my God, what am I going to do? What if this happens? And then that, and the next thing you know, you're fired or have cancer, right? So you're getting stuck on this hamster wheel where you're taking something negative. You're zooming in really narrowly on just the negativity of it, and then you're rehashing it over and over and over again, and you feel trapped. That's what the harmful rumination or worry is.
You have this example in the book about a baseball player whose name I'm Rick.
Ankiel.
Ankiel. You talk about how his chatter sort of gets in the way of something that should have been really muscle memory, right? He was this ace pitcher who just got into his own head and stopped being able to pitch. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's something that people can relate to, this kind of feeling of like, once you get into your own head, it's hard to kind of get out of it.
Yeah, so many of us have habits that we develop over the course of our lives, and they serve us really well because they allow us to do really complicated things without having to think about it. So I can get up on a stage and talk to 1,000 people, and I'm not thinking about how to use my hands or whether I should be pacing left or right or undulating my voice up or down, or should I make that joke about my family or not? It's just through experience, I've developed a habit, a speaking habit. And the same is true for sports and surgery and law and you name the industry, right? What happens when we experience chatter is it dismantles those habits, because when we experience chatter, that zooms us in really narrowly on the problem. So let's say I'm really worried about whether I'm giving a good presentation. What I'm going to start doing is I'm going to start thinking about all the individual elements that go into the behavior. So is my vocal tone on target? Am I pacing enough? Am I smiling sufficiently? Do I look like I'm upset when I'm talking to the audience? And once you start hyper-focusing on the individual elements of your behavior, poof, it unravels and you don't get invited back to give the presentation. Or in the case of Rick Ankiel, I talk about in the book, he doesn't win the game. And in his case, his pitching career ended. I mean, his was a really tragic case because Rick Ankiel, for listeners who may not know who he is, he came into the league in his rookie season being touted as potentially being one of the best pitchers of all time. And through the first season, he certainly acted that way. He was pitching like a phenom. And he threw a wild pitch in the playoffs. It sailed over the catcher's head. And then the chatter started brewing. He called it his inner monster. And he started thinking about, well, where's my weight? Am I squeezing the ball too tight? And then it just all went, bye-bye, to use the technical term. So that's one way that chatter can really unravel us at work. But that's not the only thing it can do to us when it comes to thinking and performing. The other thing that it can do is it can consume us. And, you know, we only have a limited ability to focus at any given time on a problem or a paper or an assignment. And when we're consumed with chatter, that's soaking up all of the mental resources we have to focus, leaving nothing over to do what we need to do. And the example I like to give people is, think about a time when you were worried about something and you tried to read a few pages in a book. I bet many listeners have had the experience of reading 4 or 5 pages. They definitely read the words, but if you gave them a little quiz at the end and asked them, hey, what'd you read? No idea. I bet it even happened to each of you with families, friends, loved ones. When you're worried about something, you're at a restaurant, they say something and you don't actually hear what they said. Right. Am I off base? You could tell me. It wouldn't be the first time.
No,
I'm wrong.
I think that's absolutely, absolutely on target.
Definitely the case. Yeah. And I would think that getting these emotions out or being able to talk about your problems or your traumas or your emotional challenges would be a way of, you know, having this sort of cathartic release to get rid of them so that you can focus on what you want to. But you had mentioned in your book, something that sort of surprised me was that being sort of habitual and talking about your trauma can actually make your chatter worse. And that would sort of run counter to what I think of when I think of sort of weekly mental health and going to therapy. Can you talk about that, sort of the relationship of talking about your emotions and trauma and how that can affect the amount of chatter you're experiencing?
Yeah, I think thank you for asking. I think it's a really important issue. We often think, as I think you just described, Jordan, that when we're experiencing chatter, it's helpful to just vent our feelings, find someone to talk to and just unload, find someone on, you know, social media, find another person in life, but get it out. Turns out that people have been researching this issue for decades, and it is not true. So talking to other people, to be clear, can be an amazingly useful tool. And I do not want to advocate not talking to other people, but you've got to find the right people to talk to, and you've got to talk to them the right way. So here's how talking goes wrong. If we just find someone, you know, something really bad happened, I'm rejected at work and I get insulted by a colleague and I'm spinning. I find someone to talk to and I just vent my emotions. I let them out. I find you, Jordan. We're buddies now. Alice, you'll be on the next example. So no hard feelings.
Okay, good. Okay.
So I call you up and you know, you start asking me about what happened. I tell you, that makes me feel connected to you. Right. So me knowing that there's someone there who cares enough about me to actually listen to what happened to me and empathize feels really good in the moment and may strengthen our friendship connection. But what it doesn't do, if you're just asking me, really, that's what happened? I can't believe it. Yeah, it makes sense you felt that way. I feel the same way. If that's all we do, that's something called co-rumination. Right? We're just venting with each other in a certain sense. And it makes us feel close, but it doesn't do anything to help me reframe the way I'm thinking about the experience. Ultimately, I'm coming to you because I don't just want someone to validate what I feel, but I also want to stop ruminating about the problem, right? And there, another person could be amazingly helpful if they not only learn about what we felt a little bit. So, you know, it is important to hear what did this other person go through. But then at a certain point in the conversation, they help us take a step back and look at the bigger picture. So look, Ethan, you know, if I'm channeling you, you've been insulted lots of times. How have you dealt with it in the past, right? You're still here. You made it. Or let me tell you what I do when I get into this situation. Here's how I handle these kinds of circumstances. So essentially what you want to do is two things. You want to find someone who is skilled at both listening and hearing you, but then nudging you to focus on that bigger picture to help you reframe the experience. That's what I think the formula is for a good chatter advisor. And what it means is, I think it means being really deliberate about who you talk to, who you seek out for advice and support. So there are many people in my life who I love dearly, and I'm pretty sure they love me back, who I don't go to them when I'm experiencing chatter, because I know they're just going to make it worse, because they're going to ask me what happened. I'm going to leave the conversation. I'm still going to be ruminating. Instead, there are like 2 or 3 people that I go to with personal problems and 3 or 4 for professional. And that's my like chatter board. You know, they're really skilled. And so I think the science here can really point us towards how to find good support, but also be good support providers for others.
I think that's a really important distinction to make. You're not saying don't talk to people at all, don't go to therapy, you know, go to these things, go to people who are going to help you kind of get out of the rumination, because it's the rumination that's really where things get sort of toxic.
Exactly. You know, and many, in fact, empirically supported therapies do precisely what I'm describing. The key to be alert to is the seductive allure of venting. It feels good in the moment to just get it out and keep going and going and going. And it feels good because you and I are now so closely connected. You can see this playing out in social media, right? With the elections, you know, you see these echo chambers of hostility just throwing, you know, coals on the fire here about how awful these different candidates are. Doesn't matter what political orientation you are, they all stink in the opposing party. It's not constructive. It's good for making friends, but not for working through the problem. So find someone who you can share with, but then after a certain point, go broad so you can move on.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angi to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angi app or visit Angi.com today. You can do this when you Angi that.
You mentioned social media twice now. I'd love to talk about that. So how does social media affect our chatter? Can we dive into that a little bit more? I imagine that there's both good and bad here.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. And I think it's such an important thing to keep in mind that social media is a new environment. It's a new ecosystem, if you will, that we spend a lot of time engaging in. And environments aren't good or bad. It depends how you navigate them and who you interact with on them. Just like in the physical world, right? Like we learn from a very young age how to, you know, I learned how to navigate New York City adaptively, relatively adaptively. I made it, right? I didn't get mugged or, you know, in big trouble. And I learned, like, you know, these are the things you do. These are the places you go and the people you talk. And this is how you talk to people. If you don't like a person, you don't go up to them and say, hey, you're an A bleep bleep hole, right? I mean, there's a decorum. That's called socialization. And culture gives us those lessons, right? They've been honed over time through a cultural evolution, right? We've learned how to successfully navigate the world in ways that work for us. Now we transport ourselves to social media, brand new environment, if you think about it, right? 15 years old. We haven't had time to develop those lessons about how to navigate the spaces effectively or ineffectively, and to teach our children how to do it. In many cases, it's the children telling the adults about what social media is. And so what has ended up happening, at least from my point of view, someone who's researched this, is we've been stumbling along as we navigate social media. And we've learned that there are some things we do on it that can promote our chatter, like when it's you know, late at night, or maybe even not so late at night, and we find ourselves just scrolling through the Instagram feeds or Facebook feeds and peering in on our colleagues and their amazing conquests at work, or our friends who are doing these marvelous things and looking incredible because they're curating how they present themselves online, giving themselves, you know, making themselves look good, which you can argue makes sense given we have the ability to do that on social media. So we now know that when you passively consume that information, that can elicit feelings of envy and promote chatter. We also know that social media can make it a lot easier for us to be ugly with other people, right? Many of the empathy cues that are present in daily interactions are missing on social media. So I'm talking to each of you now. I can see your faces. You know, you're nodding attentively. You're smiling. Not right now, you're not smiling, but there we go. I got
now
it.
I am.
Okay, now you are. So I'm getting information all the time that's constraining how I behave, right? I would venture to say if I said something really nasty to either of you, I get information back from your faces that would impact how I would subsequently respond. That's all missing on social media. And so what it does, it allows us to say things to other people that we would never say to their face. And that can promote things like cyberbullying and trolling, which can be potent sources of chatter and are huge public health problems. So that's the dark side. The positive side is that social media can be an amazing tool for getting support from others when we have problems, or providing support to other people, right? With a little phrase or an emoji, someone on Twitter can ask something and I can give them a little boost. That's amazing. And so with social media, I think what the challenge is to figure out what are the healthy versus harmful ways of navigating with respect to chatter. And science is beginning to give us those insights to help pave the way.
So one of the ways I found, especially around the election, that social media really affected my chatter was the lack of distancing. And distancing is something you talk about as being one of the primary strategies for kind of reducing chatter and managing chatter. And what I mean by that is the kind of immediacy of social media and the feeling of like, this is another fire that has to be put out. This is, you know, another emergency that's going on would elicit my chatter like crazy, would just strike it up. And what I found helpful was taking a step back, thinking, you know, it has always been thus, these things happen and they will continue to happen, and or looking at larger pieces about putting things into perspective more. So I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about distancing as a form of managing chatter.
Yeah, so distancing is a useful tool for managing chatter. So if we go back to something we talked about earlier, when we experience chatter, it zooms us in really narrowly on the problem. We're focused on that one person or thing and nothing else. And we're replaying the devastating or feared outcome over and over and over again. What distancing does is it lets us take a step back and look at the bigger picture. And when we do that, what we can often see are solutions that, or alternative ways of thinking about the situation that make us feel better. Just to give an example of what distance is all about, I often like to encourage people to think about a time when a friend or a loved one comes to you with a problem that they're experiencing chatter about. They're worried, they're ruminated, they don't know what to do. And they present the problem to you, and it's easy for you to coach them through that situation. Right. The reason for that is it's not happening to you. You have the mental space. You are stepped back. And when we have that mental space or distance, it's much easier to weigh in objectively. So how do you distance? The good news is that there are a multitude of distancing tools that exist, things that we can do ourselves or ways of talking to other people that can help us. And I spent a lot of time in the book talking about those tools. Just to give you a few examples really quick. One thing you could do is Alice, something that you just said, right? You can. I think you said it has always been thus. Am I getting it right?
That's right.
Okay, so that's a form of what I would argue is temporal distancing, mental time travel, right? So when I'm stressed out about the pandemic, right before we logged on, I had two kids who had systematically dismantled their mother's closet in an attempt to find something green to wear for St. Patrick's Day. Screaming everywhere. I'm on a pod, like, you know, so what can I do? Like, pandemic's making it hard to be at home and get work done. I could think, well, 4 months from now, I'm going to be vaccinated. I'm going to be back at work and, you know, not having all this tumult at home. What that does, that transporting myself into the future, that's distancing. It makes me realize big picture, what I'm going through right now is awful, but guess what? It's temporary. It will end. That gives me hope, and hope is a bomb for chatter. You could also go back in time. And I often have done this with the pandemic too. I think about the pandemic of 1918, which was even worse than the current pandemic. And guess what? We got through that, right? Even worse. You know, no Zoom conferences, no takeout back then, right? We got through it. We will get through this too. So that's one thing you can do. Another really easy distancing tool, something called distanced self-talk. You could try to coach yourself through a problem like you're talking to someone else. We're really good at giving advice to other people, not so good at following our own advice. What we've learned is you can use language to coach yourself like you're speaking to someone else. And so the way this manifests, and don't hang up, bear with me. I'll tell you about the science in a second because it's going to sound kooky. It's, all right, Ethan, what are you going to do here? Use your name and second person pronouns, you, to coach yourself through a problem. Julius Caesar, Henry Adams, LeBron James, Malala Yousafzai, Jennifer Lawrence. These are all people who there are records of them spontaneously doing this under stress. What we've learned is that language can be a distancing tool. We typically use names when we think about and refer to other people. And what we've learned to do, it's like a linguistic hack or a psychological jujitsu move, right? When we use our own name to think about ourselves, that changes our perspective. It gets us to relate to ourselves like we're talking to someone else. And that gives us distance, and that can be productive too. So those are just two examples of a sea of other distancing tools that can be quite helpful for chatter.
What about meditation? That's the first thing I think of when I think of, you know, getting the practice of being able to quiet your inner voice or be able to control your mind in some way that's calming or suppressing that chatter. How well does meditation work in doing that?
Meditation is great if it works for you. It is what I consider a one kind of chatter busting tool. But I want to emphasize it's one tool. I think one message that often gets lost in popular culture is the idea that we've got lots of tools for managing our chatter. And if you ask me, well, what's the best one? And believe me, I get that question a lot. I tell you, I can't answer that question because there are no magic bullets. What we've learned is that different combinations of tools work for different people. And really, I think the challenge is to figure out what are the combinations of tools that work best for you. So some people don't like meditating for a variety of reasons. And if that's the case, don't feel bad. There are other things you can do. I think the same is true, by the way, for the idea of living in the moment, which is closely wedded to the idea of mindfulness and meditation. Being in the moment can be great, right? Like, I like being in the moment when I'm hanging out with my kids at the playground, having fun. But the human mind did not evolve to be in the moment all the time. The mind evolved to be able to travel through time. And that is an amazing capacity, right? We can think about the past to learn from our mistakes. We could fantasize about the future. We could plan. I'm not giving up that capacity, and I don't think anyone should. So this idea that we should always be in the moment is also, I think, taking something that can be useful in small doses, right? Being in the moment at times and generalizing way too far.
You have so many great strategies in the book, and I know we're a little bit short on time, but I want to get to, you talk about green spaces and kind of getting out into nature and how that helps you kind of increase this feeling of awe. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, just to give people a framework, there are tools that you can implement on your own. There are tools that exist in our relationships with other people. And then there are tools that exist in the physical world around us. So there are tools all around. And nature can be one place to find really useful tools. So one thing that nature can do is recharge us. So I, you know, when we talked before about how when you're experiencing chatter, it can consume all of your mental resources. Well, when you find a safe natural space, and I want to say safe because as a former city dweller, Brooklynite, not all forms of nature are relaxing for me, right? You know, if I go into the forest and it can be dicey. So you want to find like a safe, what you consider to be a safe green space. You know, let's say a park or an arboretum. What that does is when you're navigating through nature, it lets your guard down, right? And you become gently fascinated by the beautiful world around you, the shrubs and the trees. And that lets you recharge in ways that can be really useful for combating chatter. But what nature can also do, which I find really just almost magical, is it can provide us with a sense of awe that can help us calm our chatter down or quell our chatter as well. So awe is an emotion that we experience when we're in the presence of something vast that we have trouble explaining. A lot of people get it when they look at nature, trees that have been there for hundreds of years or the Grand Canyon. It's not exclusive to nature though. I experienced it a few weeks ago when I saw the Mars rover land on Mars, right? Like I have just figured out intellectually, how we have been able to master air travel. Like, I get it. I understand the physics of how you now get an airplane in the air. I don't understand interplanetary travel. Like, that we have figured out how to get an SUV off this planet and safely land it on another and send video back, awe-inspiring to me. What happens when we experience awe is it shrinks our problems, right? When we're contemplating something vast and indescribable, our own problems often feel a whole lot smaller by comparison. And that can help relieve chatter too. And so you can often get awe, the experience of awe from navigating natural spaces, but you could also get it from other things too, like watching your kid do something awe-inspiring, like take their first steps or looking at a great piece of art. You know, different people have different awe triggers. But it's a wonderful illustration of how we can find ways of managing our mind just all around us, and it's free, you know? And I haven't found any side effects yet.
Ethan, thank you so much. This has really been great.
Absolutely great.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Now it's time for Upgrade of the Week, where we talk about that one thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Ethan, what is your upgrade this week?
After several years, I finally convinced my two young daughters to watch Iron Man with me. And I've been watching 10 minutes of it each night before bed after they read. And it brings me such enormous joy to share my love of superheroes with them that I go to sleep a very happy person.
How old are your daughters?
They are 10 and 7.
10 and 7. Did it take much convincing?
Oh, it took every persuasive psychological tool that I know of to get them to watch Iron Man. And they now love it. So I'm very happy.
And now you're doing it in doses, 10 minutes at a time?
10 minutes. They read for their, you know, they've got their reading times. And the little treat after that, I'm probably violating lots of parenting convention here, but so be it, is we get to watch 10 minutes of Tony Stark, and it's wonderful. It's what I've dreamed about. So
that's great. That's great. That'll slowly snowball until you guys are trying to watch the entire MCU when they're older.
Now you know, Jordan, the grand master plan.
Yep.
That's it.
That's the natural conclusion. Alice, what's your upgrade this week?
So this is something I hope Ethan will approve of, because it's sort of chatter related. And I learned it on a meditation app called 10% Happier. Mm-hmm. And they talked in this one, they do like a little course and then there's a little meditation. And in the course, they talked about thinking of the emotion in your head that's kind of out of control as a character, mm-hmm. and thereby kind of reducing its importance.
Yeah.
And it's been really helpful for me for my anxiety, which is run amok, especially lately with, like, you know, with everything going around. And I found it's so helpful to think of it as this like little gremlin kind of
mm-hmm. yeah.
just going yeah. around in my head, like making trouble, as opposed to this like big behemoth thing that's sort of taking over my whole life. Anyway, I've been using it over the past couple of weeks and it's really made a huge difference. And it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that's a distancing tool. I mean, that's exactly yeah. it. You are now separating the harmful thought. It's not me. Right? It's something else.
Yeah.
And that's like one step towards getting distance and working through. So I'm delighted that that's working for you.
And not taking it so seriously too, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, now it's kind of this adorable, hilarious little, you know, like a little yeah. Tasmanian devil.
Have you watched Big Mouth, Alice?
Yes, I have.
Okay. All
yes,
right.
I have. What, the anxiety mosquito? Is that the...
Yeah. There's so many little gremlin looking like characters that express different emotions. And that's immediately what I think of when I think of sort of giving it a name. For myself, do you have a name for sort of your anxiety self? Like whenever I'm thinking a certain way, I just think of it as Irrational Jordan. And that's what I call it.
You just did it, though. You used your own name right there. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I consider it like, yeah, this is irrational Jordan thinking this way.
Yeah. I go much more juvenile, and I have an expletive set of expletive filled names for when I get out of sorts.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
I don't have a name for it yet, but I'm going to have to come up with one.
Yeah. You know, it's funny though. So many people when I was working on the book, I mean, had names that they volunteered. They were so excited to share with me. Like, the itty bitty shitty committee. That was a fun one. the obnoxious roommate, you know, what was the other one? I think it was Charles. You know, Charles.
a very just normal.
Yeah.
Normal, yeah, I had this image of
Charles,
name.
Very, very smug, you know, maybe has an accent. And
Gary. Gary.
But that is, so now I'll switch to scientist mode for a second. Fascinating to me that we stumble on these tools. Like you stumbled on Jordan, not irrational Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. Like itty bitty shitty committee, like, those aren't things that we're teaching that people, I think, are just, you know, your mom probably didn't tell you, hey, Jordan, when you're upset, remember, that's irrational, Jordan. I mean, I teach my kids that, but I study this stuff, right? So the fact that we just stumble on these things in our life, A, is fascinating, but B, I think it just shows you how much further we can go if we actually know what the tools are and can be deliberate about using them. Like, how many things haven't we discovered? And that's really exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Jordan, what's your upgrade?
So my upgrade this week is going to be a kind of, I guess I'll consider it a kindness hack or a friendship hack. We all have, I imagine, subscribed to some type of service that has a referral code involved. You know, you can refer someone to, you know, join the subscription that you're a part of, and you get a bonus out of it, and sometimes your friend gets a bonus out of it. But no one should use them. I hate if you've ever gotten a referral code from a friend, you've probably thought, what the fuck are they doing? Like, I am not about to sign up for this credit card because they get a $100 credit for it or something like that. It's an annoying thing to ever receive a referral code from someone trying to get you to sign up for a thing, especially if you're a friend. It just sort of seems to me like a weird boundary to cross. The reverse of that, though, is pretty kind, I think. And it's something that I've tried to do pretty recently, where if I'm going to sign up for a thing, then just ask a few friends if they already have that service. Because I'm going to sign up for it anyway. I am basically, if I don't use their referral code, then I am just, by opportunity cost, like taking away some nice benefit that I could have given to one of my friends. So if I'm going to sign up for any new service, if I'm going to sign up for a new ride sharing service or a new food delivery service or a new anything, I just send a message to a few of my friends or in a group chat and ask if anyone uses it already. 90% of the time, someone is already using that service that I know. And then I say, oh, great, give me your referral code. Then I'm asking for it and taking away sort of that uncomfortable feeling of someone sharing their referral code.
I like that very much.
Nice upgrade, Jordan.
Thank you.
Well, Ethan, thank you so much. This has really been great.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts or really wherever you listen. It doesn't have to just be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever. If you see a place to review, review us. We would really appreciate it. You can also reach us by calling at 347-687-8109 and leaving us a voicemail. Or you can write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Instagram at lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.